moments and show this universal behavior, calculate these exponents. Now, I'm not doing really justice to the field because I pointed out the most important problem. But of course, this field is huge. Those guys are doing lots of phenomenology, lots of analog things to our instantons, our vortices, etc. So it's a huge field. But this is just, I selected the most important problem, which is equivalent for us to solving analytically Young-Mills theory. So now much progress has been done there in another direction by taking simplified models, not really Navier-Stokes equations, and there calculating analogous exponents. So you will see names like the passive scalar, etc. All those models, in fact, have not been embedded in gravity. So there is a huge open field that you can take one of those solvable models, put it in gravity, a gravitational analog, and see that you can actually do the same thing in gravity. In lecture number two, we discussed the relativistic case. So basically, we took an opposite approach to what we were doing. Instead of looking at simplified models, we actually embedded it in a much bigger model, in CFT hydrodynamics. But actually, that was quite useful. One example that it was useful was that I showed you that actually the Kolmogorov scaling relation follows from a very simple scaling relation, also in the relativistic case. Now here I mainly discussed the neutral case. So the equations were always these ones, just conservations of energy momentum tensor. However, this is not generally what we do. In particular, in Rieck or other examples, you also have charged currents. So you can have all kinds of charged currents, A some, some number of indices, and then you will get charged hydrodynamics. And I'm not going to discuss all of this, but let me just point out one particular interesting example that actually originally came from gravitational calculation, then was shown also to exist, due to field theory arguments, and that is the problem of anomalies. So if you have a triangle anomaly with three currents in the microscopic theory. So this is both like CABC. So if you put an external field, that would have meant that, for instance, D mu J mu A is something like CABC F mu mu A. Without external field, it will be just triangular anomaly for global currents. Otherwise, if you put external field, you will see such an equation. And the question was, what is the effect of this on hydrodynamics? And in fact, it's a huge calculation that was done on the gravity side by two groups, one in Germany, one in India. A group, they actually added the charge Simon sum, and what they found out that the hydrodynamic current, so it has normally usual things like charge distributions, time velocity, all kinds of other stuff. And then it has some term which corresponds to the anomaly, where omega mu is the vorticity term. It's some half epsilon mu mu alpha theta mu 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 theta. And this psi A is related to the anomaly coefficient, so is something like C A B C, chemical potential mu B mu C, and then it has another term which is like minus the third and A mu B C and D over epsilon. So what I wrote here is that due to anomaly, a term that actually was missed in the Landau book was revealed because of gravity, and it changes the behavior of the hydrodynamic current in a way which is proportional to vorticity term and proportional to the anomalous term. So mu's here are the chemical potentials. Mu A are the chemical potentials. And epsilon is the energy density, as before, P is the pressure, N is just the charge distribution. This actually has various interesting experimental effects that you can observe in principle in the data of RIC. I'm not going to discuss it, but one about the spin distribution of the particles, another one about what's called the chiral magnetic effect. So in fact, it's an interesting thing that something that came from gravity, by the way, could have been discovered without, but was missed. Was missed in a very actually interesting way, because in Landau Lipschitz's book, they prove that this term is absent because of the second law of thermodynamics. But apparently this is wrong. And then there's a cute paper by Pson and Srovka who corrected that argument to show that it exists. So, that's one thing that one learns from gravity before knowing the field theory. One can generalize this also to non-abelian currents.
So what's the idea to derive this?
What is what?
The idea for deriving it.
From gravity.
From your theory.
Let me first tell you how to describe gravity. In gravity, it's because when you have an anomalous current in the field theory, that means on the gravity side there is a Chern-Simons term. When you add this Chern-Simons term and analyze the hydrodynamics in the way I'm going to describe, you discover this term. And that was the first way it was discovered. The second is that when you have triangle anomalies, you have to modify actually what you mean by the entropy current compared to the way that you see in Landau-Lipschitz. There's a different entropy current that is a positive definite, and along these lines you derive exactly that. So, in fact, recently we did also the non-abelian, and the non-abelian one we also first did it in gravity, and only after that we will do it in 50. Okay, so I will start with this, and now I want to discuss in this lecture a different problem. So this lecture number 3, now I want to discuss the second most important problem is the problem of singularities. Unless you have actually questions about these other two, or something that I didn't say anymore. Okay, so let me formulate the problem of singularities. So you can formulate it in various ways, but let's look at the simplest case. We look at simplest, at the end there's a complicated one, but simplest thing we describe. The Navier-Stokes equation, the non-relativistic one. So we wrote them in the first lecture. It's some evolution equation of a velocity field plus a non-linear term. And on the right hand side, there is a pressure, there is also viscosity, potentially you can have also external field if you want, and you have also the incompressibility condition, the IDI. So this is the equation. Now, the millennium problem, for which you will get $1 million if you solve it, is also very famous. It's very simple to formulate. I will not do the precise mathematical statement, but you start with initial data, which is Vi of x and 0, and you require certain regularity conditions on it. Namely, it is smooth, it is differentiable, it's bounded, etc., etc. So, bounded in some very precise mathematical sense. But in a precise mathematical sense, it means that it is part of this effective description. And then the question is it possible that after finite time, you will develop a blow up, which means that some gradients of this velocity will go to infinity? That's the question. So, actually, the problem is formulated in both ways. You can either prove it or disprove it. I mean, if you have counterexample, it's also good. That's the question. Now, of course, you can say that you don't care because it's a mathematical problem for a physicist. But in fact, it's actually a very important problem also for physics, because what it says, if it blows up, is that this effective description of fluid dynamics is not complete. Now, we are not shocked by that, right? We have lots of examples like this. I mean, in Zeidler-Witten theory, if you go to the monopole point, your extra masses, the free form, effective theory breakdown. If in string theory you go to the conifold, there's a massless black hole, effective theory breaks down, so we are not sure. But this is not the way people view hydrodynamics, or in particular the incompressible atmospheric equations. This is supposed to be a complete theory by itself. So if you start with initial conditions within that that effective theory, it will not blow up. So I can give you another example. I mean, this is like F equal ma, right? So let's forget about fluids and let's discuss soccer game, okay? So soccer game, you have all these soccer players and they are subject to this F equal ma because it's a classical Newtonian physics. Is it possible that at some point Ronaldo is going to kick the ball such that something will blow up? Now this sounds very unlikely, right? because within the initial conditions, something like that is not going to happen.
Yes, because of the breakdown of time with the symmetry, you cannot set things up this way by starting with a singular solution and going into regular solution.
You mean to formulate the problem in a different way, but the problem is that once you start with a singular solution, there's no evolution equation. So how to run it is going to be, it's not very clear how to run starting with a singular solution. I mean,
but to get to infinity, you can say you can always put an upper bound in some dimensionless.
It depends what type of infinity. You see, for instance, if it's compressible global, compressible hydrodynamics, so you have shock waves, there is a way to go beyond the singularity. It's called weak solutions. So, but these are relatively mild things. So basically, you look at integrated quantities like distributions. But such a blow up is actually very strong. It tells you that it's not going to be only the first derivatives. Lots of derivatives are blowing up, and it's like in gravity, you have a naked singularity. If I give you a naked singularity and ask you to start with that, kind of difficult to. So I don't know if there is any.
Usually, have an approximation expansion parameter. You don't want things to get bigger than that. Not infinity, it's usually bigger than one.
No, you're talking about different thing. You're asking, is it possible that, for instance, it will not be infinity, but it will be big enough in order to have the to require the other derivatives? Maybe that's the question you're asking. It's a different question, and I think it's equivalent to what I was saying. It's like saying F equal ma, and then suddenly you tell me no. I play with classical objects, billiards, and then I need the post-Newtonian approximation. It's strange. We don't expect something like that happening in ordinary classical mechanics. Because the subleading terms are suppressed, if you wish, by the speed of sound. So for instance, if this was embedded in conformal field theory, the subleading term is suppressed by 1 over c.
Suppose I would have found for any number that you give me a solution where the gradient is bigger than that. But there is no such thing that goes to infinity, I would still say that it breaks down.
It is possible, but the question is again, within the conditions of the initial condition, it depends what you want to add. You can say, look, I want not this number of Stokes equation, but the next submitting correction includes more derivatives. Okay, it's another equation. For that you need a set of different initial conditions because it will be higher derivative question. And then it could be a closed theory by itself. I don't know. Here the question is different. Is that will you have bounded solutions in appropriate way that you do not require the second the higher derivatives? Will it remain there or not? That's basically what it's. So it's extremely formulated for a blow up, but in principle the question is, can you remain within the theory, or do you need the subleading correction? And we know many effective theories that break down. But okay, so this is basically the mathematical problem, and also it has some physical significance. And there is actually a similar problem that we know in gravity, of course. This is naked singularities. So let's discuss that. By the way, there is one curious result in this field, is again by a mathematician, Sinai, who showed that if you look at complex solutions, not real ones, there is a generically a finite time blow-up. But then the solution explodes, but it's proportional to complex time. So it's a a different story, but that's the, like, curious attachment. Now, let's discuss cosmic symmetry. So basically, the question is, suppose we start with some initial Cauchy data for the evolution. So what I mean by this is, for instance, here the, let's suppose it's four dimensions. So then you have some free manifold, some induced metric, and some extreme curvature. And they satisfy the Gauss-Kutatsky equation. So this is called the Cauchy-Cauchy data. You can start this and propagate. And the question is, will you, or under what condition, will you develop a naked singularity? And by naked singularity, we mean singularity that is not covered by a horizon. Now, the weak cosmic censorship basically says that generically it's not going to happen under certain conditions, etc. But this is, to a large extent, an open problem. We don't know whether in GR, what happens in GR. In particular, there is the issue of genericity. So typically you say, okay, for extremely fine tuned, you might generate it, but generically it's not going to happen. But to a large extent, this is an open thing. It looks actually very similar to that. In fact, it's not just similar, it's even a little bit more precise than can be related. And that's what we will discuss. So now I'm going to tell you about a clever idea by Penrose, if I find the idea by Penrose how to consider singularities in GR. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to learn from gravity for fluid dynamics, and in fact not just for fluid dynamics. Then go back to this one.
So we know the isodynamics equation can fail sometime on its own, just because the gradient expansion, suddenly your gradient is getting bigger and bigger. So yes. This is not what you're referring to.
Suppose you work within a certain approximation, and your initial configurations are such that you can neglect the higher gradients. Will it fail in the sense that you will still need the higher gradients? So you will get out of that effective theory. Now, they are suppressed by a very big, for instance, if you think about this embedded in the conformal theory of last time, the subleading corrections here are the speed of sound, are the speed of light. So the corrections to this are the post-Newtonian approximation. The question is, if I play within the Newtonian approximation, do I really need the post-Newtonian approximation? Ordinarily, you don't think that this is what will happen.
This equation is a matter of fact, relativistic fluid, then.
Is it what?
And with the relativistic, instead of the Navier stock?
Yes.
Relativistic fluid.
There is a similar problem that you can ask there. Suppose you work within a gradient expansion up to second order, mm-hmm. and everything initially is within that. Is it possible that you will need to get out of that? I mean, generically. Sometimes you say, okay, maybe with fine tuned, this will happen. It's different than what we are always, when we think about effective theory, we think about quantum effective theory. This behaves differently than this classical one. This is a classical system. While in quantum theory, well, you can say, okay, but all these things that run in the loop actually are up to energies which are very high, so then I can, it can be broken, the effective theory will break down, and that's why four Fermi theory breaks down, and when I get to the scale of the W, but it's different. This is a classical theory. It's like when we teach Newtonian physics in high school, the question is, you are playing within that game. Is it possible that even though you start with initial conditions of classical cars, etc., suddenly you need to go to the next order? It's a little bit different than effective theories.
I mean, for example, the electromagnetism, when you look at the sun radiation of several accelerating. So how do you remain within, you need to correct that if you give your prediction.
Electromagnetism is
classic,
but it's a relativistic
theory. No, but I think that is an example of classical, within classical theory.
Relativistic, you mean? Yes, classical, yes. Relativistic. Yes. And you refer to quantum, you mean, now? What do you mean?
No.
Okay.
The fact that you get preact is a causal behavior.
Yes.
And somehow you need to supply it. You need to correct it in some way.
Right.
But you need to go beyond.
So the analog of this is actually in hydrorelativistic hydrodynamics is like that. People, when they go only up to first derivative in relativistic hydrodynamics, they see that the equations are aquosal. Then there was a puzzle for some time, and they notice that actually when you add the higher order corrections, it happens like that. You have to.
So is an example of a classical breakdown for nothing quantum here.
Yeah. So this, the analog of this is in the classical hydrodynamics equation.
Yes.
That's very similar to that one. This is a little bit different. By the way, it could break down. I'm not saying it couldn't break down, but it's like, because this is just the Newtonian field theory, and the subleading is really post-Newtonian, you would have thought that this is, you know, something unlikely to happen. Even though, you know, I'm not insisting. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have that here.
No, there are classical breakdowns that hydrodynamics in the derivative expansion can exhibit things like this. There's also an issue of genericity. Here the issue is not official. I mean, the problem formulated is not for genericity, generically or not, but of course it's possible that, you know, for extremely fine-tuned cases it happens, and generically it doesn't. Definitely in nature, nobody saw such a thing. I mean, in fluid dynamics, I don't think anybody in nature has seen at any point in the history
explosion
like that.
There is a cutoff.
Yeah.
Equation like that.
What?
There is a natural cutoff.
It's the viscosity, but the equation is formulated with viscosity.
Not for any velocity.
What? No. I'm within the approximation that this is smaller than the speed. This equation works only for flows, which are, you know, which is also smaller than the speed of light.
The phenomenon of cavitation is then does not break this because you don't have the bounded initial condition. Because this is where I accelerate, I put a gradient so large that the water starts boiling essentially, and the hydro breaks down.
So what's the gradient?
The cavitation?
Yes, gravitation.
No, cavitation.
Cavitation.
Right, which is a phenomenon in nature where you have a gradient that's so
large. Yeah, but yeah, that's okay. I mean,
but it's so where I'm trying to fit where it failed, where it doesn't. How is this not a failing of hydro, but not a singularity at the same time? Is it just that your initial conditions are not?
So I don't know exactly. So the initial conditions here, of course, are all kinds of derivatives which are small plus bounded energy. If you fail with one of them, then of course it will go up.
So probably it's one.
That is clear. There is a very precise sense in which they bound all the derivatives. Anyway, in two space dimensions was proven not to be the case. In three, it's the open form. Okay, now what was this Penrose argument? So the Penrose inequality. So it's actually a very clever idea that he had. It's from 1973. And actually, I came across this. I also was not aware of this, but someone asked me, what are the Penrose inequalities in fluid dynamics? And that's how I got into it. Because by myself, I also was not aware of them. Penrose had the following that we can formulate it. He didn't formulate like this, but it's very simple. Let's suppose we started with this initial condition. The initial condition is some kind of data that has in appropriate way definition of a mass and some area of the horizon. So he says, let's prepare the initial conditions in such a way, and there is a lot of mathematics involved in how you precisely define it, but you will see that in the case we are interested in, it's actually very precisely defined. But you have certain amount of mass with some horizon. That's the initial condition for your system. And now it evolves. Now he says, what will happen? At very late times, this is going to relax to equilibrium. But equilibrium, by the way, here I'm discussing 4D asymptotic effect. We'll generalize it. So he said, okay, what will happen?
4D, 3 plus 1.
3 plus 1. Yeah, it's the real 3 plus 1
Before we get later.
By the way, it's an open problem. We'll discuss it later to generalize it in rather generality for higher dimension. We get that. So he says, okay, what will happen at late time? Late times is going to reach equilibrium. And equilibrium is some clear solution. Now this is an assumption, right? Because we know all kinds of funny systems that they get stuck, they never reach equilibrium. So there is an assumption here. That's what. And he says, okay, but if I look at clear solutions, they always satisfy that the mass is bigger or equal to the area of the horizon divided by 16 pi to the power half. This is, you can easily prove, where g newton I think to be 1. Now let's proceed. This is something you can easily check on four-dimensional black holes. The equality is for Schwarzschild. So the inequality is always satisfied, and Schwarzschild solution, in that case, it's equal.
Can you know this? So that you can write the area explicitly better than mass in other ways?
The reason, that is a function of angular momentum, but you will get an inequality. You write the area and it's a function of angular momentum, you will get an inequality. But if it's Schwarzschild, it's an inequality. You can easily check that this is correct. And then he says, okay, but what happens? The area of the horizon cannot decrease because of area increase theorem of Hawking. For us, it's like the second law of thermodynamics. So that means this is always bigger or equal. And that's the area increase theorem. On the other hand, he says, I'm not pumping any more mass into the system. Maybe there will be gravitational waves, so I will just lose some mass. But this has to be satisfied. Therefore, since the inequality has to be satisfied at any initial point, in fact, at any point along the trajectory of this solution. And this is called the Penrose inequality. Now he said, suppose you invent the data such that this is violated. What will happen? So, what will go wrong in this argument? So he says, okay, the only thing I assumed is that there are no naked singularities. So what will happen is, there will be a naked singularity. So if you violate the inequality, you will generate a naked singularity. On the other hand, you can try to prove that the Penrose inequality always works. Therefore, you will not generate a. Now, this is not as strong as cosmic censorship, because if you will violate it, you will generate a naked singularity. But if you don't violate it, it doesn't mean that naked singularity will not be generated. So it's not as strong. Proving Penrose inequality is not as strong as proving cosmic censorship. I mean, is that clear? Now, there's a lot of work done on that. People have been able to prove for certain initial, the most important result, I think, is for a certain initial data of k, since the curvature is zero, you can prove the inequality, but in general it's an open problem since that time. But if you think about this argument is really very, very physical. What does it tell you? It tells you if there is an equilibrium relation between the mass and the entropy that has to be satisfied, and the entropy never increases because of second law, and the energy of the system never increases because I don't pump anymore. This inequality is something that you can define for any dynamical system. In particular, we can do it for fluids, but not just for fluids. So what I want to show you is how to derive this for fluids, and what are the consequences for this question I was asking. Okay, so for that I think I need, it's good that I will, although I can derive it without that, it will be good to explain to you what is this fluid gravity correspondence. various ways to present it, but let's
do it that way.
Let's suppose I'm working in D plus one dimensions. And by D plus one dimension, I mean that I have this coordinate x mu and another additional coordinate which is r. So that it's and the asymptotics for the module in the ABS. It doesn't have to be. So the equations will be r and n plus some v times g and n equal to 0. These are the D plus one dimensional equations. And in particular, ABS is a solution, but there is another solution which is interesting, which is the Blackburn. In fact, also boosted. So the following metric is a solution, which is minus P mu mu dx mu dr plus 1 over P to the power of plus r squared eta mu mu gx mu gx mu. So this is easily seen that this is basically has the asymptotics of ABS, and the u mu and the v are exactly related. So u mu is just the boost. Mu is as usual, it's you take as gamma theta I. And V, so V to the minus 1 is 4 pi tangential divided by. Now, you can easily see that if you plug this inside this solution, these are not the Schwarzschild coordinates, but it's called adding the Finkelstein, so because of that, you see that it looks a little bit different. And if you plug this, this is a solution.
There is nothing else for.
No, because of this Eddington Finkelstein. So this is a solution, but it's a solution only if you take u mu to be constant, and the t or the v to be constant. Okay, this is just the black brain. This is the ordinary black brain that you know. You boost it, you change a little bit of coordinate, but that's what it is. Nothing more. Now you say, okay, but I want to consider u mu as a function of x and t, and t or v as a function of x and t. If you take plug it inside, it will not be a solution. That's obvious. So let's call this vs naught squared, because it doesn't have derivatives. And what you do, you start to correct the method. So you write Vs squared to be Vs naught squared plus Vs 1 squared plus all kinds of stuff. When this one starts to include derivatives, when it will have all kinds of V alpha, U alpha, all kinds of stuff. It's complicated. And now you require that this is a solution, but the solution order by order, namely that this is a solution up to neglecting this second order. This is what you're asking, and what you find out is that this is a solution up to that order, provided the following happens. The Einstein's constraint equations, which for instance can be written in this language as Gm r equal to 0, they are exactly the conservation law of some stress tensor. And that stress tensor you can get order by order in the derivatives. And it is what we actually wrote before. This is a very particular form for gravity, for this vector, which is something like this one, or 16 pi, e to the power of e, eta mu, plus e, mu, minus 1. Plus There are various ways to see that. One is just, you know, plug and derive these results. Or another way, get to the boundary stress tensor, derive it, and see that it is of this form. And there's a third way, is just to see that these are just the equations that determine the dynamics of the horizon. Now, you remember that the last time this was just minus 2 eta, right? And actually, there is a particular form of eta because of this ratio eta over s, which is 1 over 4 pi, that So that's why there is a particular form, and let's see that this is actually the eta over s is 1 over 4 pi that dictates this particular form. Now, let's see a couple of things about this solution. So for instance, let's discuss this black brain solution. It has a horizon R equal E minus 1. It's easy to see there that it has this horizon. The horizon doesn't change in the first order, but then it's appearing also as we start to change. The metric on the horizon, the induced metric on the horizon, is on the horizon. So if I plug this inside here, at R equal B to the minus 1, what I'm going to get here is b to the minus 2 times u mu mu and another one. It's basically b minus 2 times eta mu mu plus u mu 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 gives mu mu mu. Now you remember, this is this operator we discussed last time. This is the projection operator b mu mu. It has a zero eigenvalue. In fact, it's clear because this horizon has to be a null surface, and indeed the metric is the general. This p mu mu has a zero eigenvector, p mu 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 is zero. In fact, it's not really a codimension one surface, it's effectively a codimension. The normal to the horizon is, so if you write your equation for the horizon, f is minus b to the minus 1, let's discuss the case for when it's constant. Then what is the normal? The normal to the horizon L n will be a g n n n of f. And if you calculate that, you see that is the L in the direction mu, which is u mu, and the other one. So basically, the horizon looks like this. It looks, that's what I mean. The horizon looks like there is an R equal B minus 1, and the normal to this is just the union. And the second order, at the first order, this remains the same, even if I include the derivative. So basically, the two quantities, temperature and the velocity of hydrodynamics, one is the normal to the horizon, and the other one is the surface gravity, the location of the horizon. One more thing we need to know is what is the entropy. So the entropy is the entropy current is, let's say, it's some S times U mu. This is the normal, and S you can read from the area of the horizon, but we divide by 4, so it's 1 over 4 B to the D minus 1. Because I just look at the metric, I read the area, and the 4 is because this is the entropy current, and you can easily check that eta over s is minus 1 over 8, minus 1 over 16 pi b to the d minus 1 divided by, not minus, plus, divided by 4 over b to the d minus 1. minus 1, and it's this 1 over 4 pi. It's the same as 1 over 4 pi. Okay, so this is a particular example that the gravity gives you this eta over s.
Okay, so now let's go back to Penrose inequality. So I need to define for the Penrose inequality the entropy, but there is a very well-defined entropy, and I need to define also the mass, but the mass is just the integral of T00. So let me do that. So the mass of the energy I will write an integral, but later I will just forget about the integral. You have to edit all the time, but it's the integral of T00. And the entropy, this is the entropy density, is actually the integral of the component S0. You need to, when it's boosted, you need to take the zeros component. Okay, so now let's look at this case, and let's take the case of rest, the simplest case of rest. That's the analog of the black brain, is the analog of the Schwarzschild case. So I will consider u mu to be at rest. It's 1, 0. What is T00? So T00 is 1 over 16 pi b to the power of b times minus 1. So I'm looking at the without viscosity at the moment, the ideal case. That's the analog of the Schwarzschild. I want to derive the Penrose inequality. First, it's the equality. So let's call it E. And as we say, it is just 1 over 4 b to the power of b minus 1. So now I can take this and relate S to E. So what is the relation? So we have to solve for B. So E is something like B minus 1 divided by 16 pi 4 S B over B minus 1. So this is the Penrose inequality for the black brain. And actually what it is, in fact, if you want to derive the Penrose equality in general case, this is just the equilibrium thermodynamic relation epsilon plus p is p times s, where in the conformal case epsilon is just minus 1 times 1. But in general, if you use the thermodynamic this thermodynamic relation, that's the analog of the equality of them. Now the inequality is satisfied, for instance, if it's rotating or boosted, as we will see in a second. This will be the inequality that in general you want to satisfy. So the fluid that we want to discuss has to satisfy this Penrose inequality, and the question is what are the consequences of that. So the first thing you can check, you can easily take now the boosted case and ask whether it satisfies this. So in the boosted case now you have to take gamma different than 1. So
the claim would be that if you start with a configuration which does not obey this bound,
you generate
a singularity.
That will be what we conclude from Benoist. The places where it can go wrong, of course, is maybe the system never reaches equilibrium. That's one possibility. Basically, this is the only way out, I think. Because entropy increases and the energy never decreases.
Is it realistic to prepare a configuration which violates this bound?
Let's discuss it. So now, because the paper is never been published yet, we don't know the answer. can I prove that in other stocks this can be violated? Mm-hmm. That's basically the question. Right? We'll do it also for the relativity, but also for the non-relativity. So that's the question. You see, the Penrose is argument is very strong. You can take any dynamical system and do that to study singularities. It's not really related to fluid or something. I was basically using the thermodynamic relation of the system, the equilibrium relation, relate the entropy to the energy, and then require this to be satisfied all the time. It's very general. In the Busquets case, so what is E? E is now 1 over 16 pi e to the power of e times, now I have to put here gamma, right? Gamma squared. So it's d times gamma squared minus 1. The entropy, on the other hand, doesn't change. It's still 1 over 16 pi. It's still 1 over quarter d to the power of e minus 1, but now it's times gamma. That's actually a little bit of generalization that we have to do to Penrose. Because Penrose was never discussed boosted case, so it's actually the zeroth component of the entropy current that is relevant, and it's also the P00 that is relevant.
Would
it
be constant along the X?
Let's start with constant, yes. That's the simplest. Well, you're right. I mean, of course, later we're going to take the more complex. Now you have to plug this inside here and check whether this is always satisfied. It's a simple exercise. It follows from so-called Hodder's inequality, and you will see that it's always satisfied, and the equality is only for gamma equal to 1. That's a very simple calculation. You can plug it, and you will see that this is always satisfied. Okay. Now, let me go to the next step. And the next step is actually the interesting story. Because at the next step, the energy decreases because of this viscosity term. The entropy at the next order is not changing. It's not conserved, but its form is not changing. Therefore, this inequality will be non-trivial now. Because I'm decreasing that side, while I'm not changing this side. Therefore, this will be a non-trivial inequality.
By the way, before you continue, so there is no analog of the problem for Euler equation only? For Euler, it's everything.
There is.
Yeah. Even for Euler, it's the problem that you posed is not solved, right?
It's not solved.
It's true. Okay.
Yes. Also, for Euler, it's not solved. But unfortunately, for Euler, we will be only famous. Cannot get this. The prize is only for the second one. By the way, they have numerical results, but the numerical results are so unstable that they cannot trust it. So they don't know. There's no answer numerically whether there is a block. Okay, if I go to the viscous level, so the first viscous level, viscous order, so you see what I can do. Now I calculate this T00, so the energy. There's always, of course, an integral that I'm always neglecting here, but you have to put it into the power of D. Now you will have D gamma squared minus 1 minus 1 over 16 pi into the power of D minus 1 times sigma naught naught. Now what is sigma naught naught? It's a not trivial quantity. I remind you, sigma mu nu was this shear tensor, so it's half du mu nu plus du mu nu plus half du mu nu.
I'm considering constant velocities.
No, they are not constant anymore, so they are always integrals. It's never, also here they were not supposed to. Also here, I just did a quick check on one example. But these are not constant velocities. So S is actually an integral over D over all space, and this is also an integral.
Sorry, I'm just confused then by the U. Why is U 1, 0, 0, 0?
So I took the equilibrium solution. In the equilibrium solution.
That's only to derive the inequality.
Right. So it's the analog of the Schwarzschild. That's the equal. And then after you derived it, they have to check it for a general thing. And then plus here u nu, u alpha, d alpha, u nu, and then this minus 1 over d minus 1, d alpha is alpha, times theta mu nu. So now I have to actually take this and calculate the sigma not not and plug it here. Of course, I derived it by the way for this, but you could have done a general eta now. Particular case of gravity, but you could have put here any eta that you like and play with this.
So the original Bernoulli equation was entirely flat space. Now you're in entirely ABS space. That's the value.
Yeah, the argument is valid. In fact, I was not even really I didn't really need the gravity for that. I could have done it directly on the fluid system, but it's true. You can do it for asymptotically ABS. But in fact, there is one thing that you have to take into account. If you will try to now take a general asymptotically ABS space and ask what is the Penrose inequality, it will depend also on the topology of the horizon. So, and in fact, I don't think this has been generally derived. For instance, in four dimensions, if you take four dimensions asymptotically ABS, the general result was derived in four dimensions, and there is a term proportional to the genus of the Euler number of the horizon. So there is work to be done here if one wants to use it, for instance, for all kinds of black rings, brains, black holes, whatever, you can do that. It's an open problem. Okay, so now if I plug this sigma not not, so I will not do it, but you can easily see that the inequality is a highly non-trivial relation now, because it relates this minus this with all the derivatives. You have to plug it here. This remains the same, and it's a very non-trivial inequality on the temperature and on the velocity. And if I am able to violate it, I will generate a singularity. Okay, so now, at this point, I can tell you that I don't know one example that violates the inequality. And one is to find such an example. I think,
yes. So this inequality is very different from the inequality mentioned earlier regarding the evolution of the shape. Is it the same thing?
The
earlier you said this, I start with smooth data, and for generic smooth data, do I get some blobs for gravity?
Yes,
it's the same.
Why? If I plug this here, so, you know, what do I get here? I get some relation between initial velocities and temperature. So take any smooth velocity and temperature, violate the inequality. Because you can violate it in general, there is a minus sign. I proved that it was working with this, but now I changed it, there is a minus sign. So this inequality is highly non-trivial. And I can write it for you. You see immediately that it's you can, in principle, easily violate. No, it's different. I don't see. So what you have here is that now the integral of 1 over 16 pi into the d minus 1 times d gamma squared minus 1 minus, let's put it at 2 eta, sigma not not, plus, plus minus d minus 1 over 16 pi b to the d minus 1. So 4s, let's put instead of 4s, 1 over b.
What about
this one? That quantity has to be bigger or equal to 0.
Maybe. If it is not satisfied,
you will get a negative, you get a singularity.
I mean, is that proven beyond doubt? Or?
No, so that's what I was saying. What is the way out in Penrose's argument?
Something bad happens different from saying that isn't it?
No, but the question is what can go wrong in all the arguments that were leading to it. And one thing that can go wrong is that it never reaches equilibrium. That's possible. Certain dynamical systems, I mean, can do that. But of course, it's not something we normally expect. I mean, in fluid, if I throw a box into the water, after some time it will relax to equilibrium. But you can say, no, maybe it will get into some motion that will never reach. It's possible. It's the same argument in Penrose. Other than that, there are... The only thing that will go wrong is that you broke the effective theory.
because you believe the second law of thermodynamic works. And you also didn't pump any more energy to the system, so it cannot increase.
What happened to the quality itself if you take the laws relativistically?
Yeah, now I'll take, now let's do the non-relativist limit in the 2 minutes that remain. But you see that in principle, I can cook up for you some configuration that will do that. I'm not saying it's easy, but alternatively, you can try to prove that actually there is no configuration that can do that. Therefore, you never generate a singularity a la Penrose. As I said, but Penrose is a necessary.
But since you have the viscosity tool, since you have this eta to play with, can't you always find? How could it be that it's not possible if you have a negative number that you can tune?
Well, I don't know. I don't have an example.
Maybe no, what I don't understand, if you put some generic configuration and then you increase this eta, don't you violate it at some point?
The problem is that there are these derivatives, so you have to be careful in hydrodynamics. You see, P mu nu has this piece which is this P mu nu ideal. And then this other one which I call minus 2 eta, whatever. This is the viscous. Now the following problem appears in hydrodynamics. There is a condition that subleading terms are negligible. Namely, this cannot be bigger than this one. Because if this one is bigger than this one, you break a hydrodynamic expansion. So if this is what you will achieve, then okay, we are not playing within the game of hydrodynamics. Because the second term is bigger than the first term.
This is what you asked before.
This is what I mean.
This is what we were asking before. This is not the. So you're saying this is not.
But in the initial if you in your initial condition break the hydrodynamic expansion, then it's clear that you cannot. But that's not the question. The question is whether within the initial condition you didn't break the expansion. If you broke it originally, then you cannot use it. And that's not within the game.
I thought that you were just stepping about solution to the nonlinear differential equation.
In the original Navier-Stokes. Yeah. Yes, but that's why you were putting conditions on the derivative there. If you will put no conditions in Navier-Stokes equations, I think we will generate singularities. But it's with a certain set of bounded initial conditions. See, if I have an effective theory, the only question is whether it's closed. Namely, I started within the effective theory initial conditions and I always ended up within an effective theory. That means it's closed. If you start already with something which breaks it, then of course, that's not part of the game. Okay, so now you must be very curious to know what happens if I do the non-relativistic thing. So let me quickly show you what is the non-relativistic result. So in the non-relativistic case, let's take this. So let's look at this. What would be the quickest way to do it? Okay, so this is like 1/6 min by b to the power d, we say, times b gamma squared minus 1, and then minus this 2 eta, until you get 2 eta sigma. Now I remind you how we did the ns is 1/4 b to the power b minus 1 times now I remind you how we did the non-relativistic limit. The non-relativistic limit, we said, okay, the scaling is the dt scaled like epsilon squared, which is like 1/2 squared, di scaled like 1/a scaled like epsilon, di scaled like epsilon, and p scaled like epsilon squared. And what we did, we said u mu is basically gamma, so it's 1/2 squared. And this is di. And temperature is T naught times 1+T. That was the expansion. So I have to plug it inside and ask what happens to the equality or the inequality at this order. Now, what order do I expect the Penrose inequality? The Penrose inequality is one lower order than the equation itself because it relates, for instance, T mu nu
while the equation of hydro is demuting. Now, you remember that in the equations themselves, you always order epsilon q. So basically, the inequality will be of order epsilon squared. So I have to derive everything here up to order epsilon squared. Now, let's see what you see, what you get on that. So, So what is B? B is basically B naught times 1 minus B, right? And it's like the inverse of T. So E can be written as 1 over 16 pi B naught to the power of B. And now, what do we have here? We have 1 minus the D of this guy, so it's dP, times this D gamma squared minus 1, which is D.
It's not class.
It's 1 over B, so it's plus. And it's d times gamma squared, which is d plus d v squared over 2 minus 1. So I have to go only to order epsilon squared, so that would be 1 over 16 pi v naught to the power of d times d minus 1. So I could put here d minus 1. And here there will be 1 plus d squared over d minus 1 times d plus d over 2 times d minus 1 d squared. And then there are higher order terms. I think I did it right. D minus 1, 16, yes. This is 1 plus. This is d squared. Okay, so this is this. And there is another contribution which I have to calculate from minus 2 eta sigma naught, not to calculate in a second. If I look at S, so S has the following thing. S has, so S will be 1 over 4 b naught to the power d minus 1 times. And now from this one I'm going to get 1 plus d minus 1 times b, and all this is times 1 plus b squared. Okay, you can quickly do that. Let me tell you the answer. The answer is the following. This condition is going to be nothing but, at the end of the day, the integral of b squared equal d naught equal to 0. And when you go to sigma naught naught, you will find out quickly that it's of higher order, so it doesn't contribute. So the whole Penrose inequality in the non-relativistic fluid dynamics is just always satisfied. It tells you that just v squared is bigger or equal to 0. And now comes the question, what did we learn from it?
It's violated exactly in the complex case.
Is what?
Exactly in a complex case, it was proven the answer.
Yeah, maybe that's a way to view it, yes. You mean complex solution, yeah. That's true. So now, well, what do we learn from it? One possibility is that actually this is a good hint to say that indeed there are no singularities in the non-relativistic compared to the relativistic. But of course, we cannot claim solution of the problem because this was a necessary condition, not sufficient. The fact that Penrose inequality always works never proves cosmic censorship. But that is the solution in the non-relativistic case.
What are the next
things? I mean, in this particular